What do I think of her?
Yes.
I don't think of her.
Bitch. Bless a red wine and a swisher. I think you get the picture. Bitch.
Here I go. Oh.
All my apes gone. NFT theft victims beg for centralized saviors.
I'm not joking, bitch. If you go on YouTube and watch an ounce of content related to this, it's exactly what they all sound like. Every tech reporter sounds exactly like this.
I need big government to fix my anti-government currency.
What a world we live in. Welcome to Patreon. Welcome to Leftovers.
Welcome to Patreon. Let's get out there and make a difference. I'm quoting RuPaul's Drag Race season 14.
Should we talk about it?
Yeah, no. I just
only part one of the premiere has come, though. So I think at the time of this airing, it'll be part two is coming out.
No, part two comes out on Friday, Queen.
Oh, it's on Friday? Why the fuck do they do Fridays?
Because...
Okay,
for the club. I just want to bring up the one shitty thing about the Friday screenings.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's any fucking children listening to this. God forbid you stole your parents' credit card.
Yeah, at this point, like...
listen to this podcast. But back in the day when, I mean, at least when I was in college, one of the things that you looked forward to most about the week was going to the gay club on a Monday.
Yeah, or like a Wednesday
To watch Drag Race.
I know when they moved it to Friday, it was a big deal. Yeah. It fucked a lot of people's money up, really.
Fridays are the days that you need to perform and get your tips at the club.
It's when people are already doing shit.
On a Friday, people are either going to stay home or you're going to have a screening at the bar, which does make money, but it edges out performers, or you have to sacrifice the screening to get those performers in justifiably. But Friday is such a stupid decision because, like, on Monday or Wednesday, I believe it was Monday, like, we got to go to the club. We got to talk about it all week. And then the girls got to, you know, travel the country talking about it all week at all the
gigs. Well, on like a weekday, it's a lot easier just to like watch something like that and talk about it. On a Friday night, it'll be like blasting music and a million people, and it's just not going to be the same vibe.
But, you know, we talked about at the very beginning, I said, let's get out there and make a difference. I am quoting Bosco from Bosco's entrance look. And I do just want to say, while you tell me about who your initial impressions were, I want to cue something up for you.
Okay. Oh, I mean, my initial impressions were, I think pretty similar to a lot of others here, is definitely Cornbread, Carrie Colby, Willow Pill, which is so hard to say after RuPaul has tried to destroy our brains by saying Willow Pill. It's like psychological torture watching Real Fun. Yeah, those two are great. I mean, a lot of the other ones are not as memorable so far, so we'll see what happens. But overall, nobody was like bad. Like nobody was actually upsettingly bad or cringy or terrible.
We love our trans queens, Cornbread and Carrie Colby.
Yeah, they're amazing.
I said Cornbread and Carrie Colby were the front runners this season, and I do love
seeing already. I think Cornbread was posting this on their Instagram stories that basically out of like the entire lineup of the queens who are going to be on tour after this, Cornbread is represented by an entirely different party than the rest of the queens for the season. I was way to have the main character arc.
But
good
speaking
job.
Of Bosco,
mm-hmm.
I know you don't watch the Pit Stop, obviously. I know you're not.
You do?
I know you're not into the RuPaul's Drag Race media extended universe.
I am.
But
I am. Watch Sister Rivalry.
Kennedy Davenport, I believe, conjured Bosco out of her own imagination.
Oh, let me see this.
I'm gonna just play you a Kennedy Davenport quote that is very applicable.
You know, they sing a song that goes like this. Black stockings, white shoes, shouldn't be allowed in the church. Oh my God!
Black stockings, white shoes, shouldn't be allowed in the church. Dear Bosco, if you're listening, Kennedy Davenport has spoken, and we now have to put you to death for it. No, Bosco's entrance look was interesting, but I do want to just point out the fact that she, to me, looks exactly like Sasha Velour.
Oh, that's what it is.
I mean,
and we don't like Shasta Velour on here. No, now.
I mean,
I remember when I met you. That was the season that was airing, and we were talking about, and you were like, "If I saw, that
wait, did we really start hanging out when it was Sasha's season?"
Yeah,
it was. That's so right because we watched the age. We watched the Sasha, Asia, and Shay lip syncs in your living room.
Yeah, where she pulled out all the roses and all the shit from her wig.
Gagged,
and you were like, "I hate this queen. I want her dead."
Okay, well, we all mature, we grow. Sasha has not done anything to me personally.
You just, I mean, you had respectable
critiques.
But
she has very influential eyebrows, as we can see by Bosco.
It's much more about the fact that the other queens were just at a different level, some that didn't feel necessary. But what has Sasha Velour done since then? I literally never hear about
them.
She
had a Quibi show, duh.
Fuck off.
Okay, don't be mean.
Her Emmy-winning Quibi performance.
Don't be mean.
It goes like this. Black stockings, white shoes, shouldn't be allowed in the church.
Oh my God, Kennedy! So, other than that, no, you know, Cornbread, Carrie, great. RuPaul will be tried for her war crimes in the way that she pronounces Willow Pill's name. I really enjoyed this episode. I think that it's fun that we don't have to relive season 13's entrance shenanigans again. Obviously, they are putting a lot of production emphasis on this season. Because if you remember, this is exactly what they did in season 6 with the big opening.
Oh, were they split into two? Mm-hmm. I think it's better. I like it more because you actually get to see
that season 6? That was season 6, how they play out.
I'm trying to remember. They've done it so many times, even on All-Stars, I think. They've done it.
Yes, it was season 6 because that was when Bianca won, and that's how they did it. Remember, because Bianca didn't meet the other girls. Yeah. And then she came into the room, and Gia was mean mugging her, and she said that Gia looked like a demon.
I need to rewatch that season.
I don't like butch queens. I don't like tacky queens. I don't like manly queens.
Coming in like fresh tilapia. I can't even say.
Gia Gunn, the very first trans woman to ever be on Joey.
Oh, yeah. Honestly. Are you talking about those sweets?
No, we don't need to. So, if you know, you know. The girls that know, know. The girls that don't, don't. Mm-hmm. I'm very much looking forward to this season. We have not seen the man. But we do know there's man on the land. Yes. So, you know, we will report back when
we've gotten some tea about
that. Metamorphosis makes her grand debut. We have gotten tea, but we cannot.
It's on the Discord. Yeah, and it'll stay on the Discord.
We cannot say the tea because we'll be blowing up someone's spot. But, yeah, great gowns, beautiful gowns. Everyone, go watch Drag Race. So, you have something about NFT. Let's get into it.
Oh, this is just a fun little update. As you guys know, I'm happy that some people definitely reached out and were like, thank you for explaining NFTs so I can understand why my, like, loser brother is telling me all this dumb shit and I can have something to actually say about it. Appreciate it. Happy I made it concise and understandable. So, basically, if you guys were on Twitter and saw any of those people who have those really stupid, like, AI-generated ape imagery, that's the NFTs they own. Basically, there was this like tweet and all these things that are coming out about all the apes that were stolen from these NFT owners. So I'm getting this from Vice specifically. Basically, on the eve of New Year's Eve of 2021, in Manhattan specifically, the Chelsea Art Gallery owner Todd Kramer, who had about 615 Ethereum, which is about $2.3 million worth of NFTs, primarily of those quote unquote bored apes and mutant apes, which are the ones you see most commonly. Had them stolen by scammers and were listed on a peer-to-peer NFT marketplace, OpenSea. Kramer quickly took to Twitter and begged for help from OpenSea and the NFT community to help regaining his NFTs. Unsurprisingly, he was ripped to shreds by others in the community for not storing his valuable JPEGs in an offline wallet. However, OpenSea froze trading of the stolen NFTs on its platform.
How do you store them in an online offline wallet?
This is the funny
part. What does it mean offline? Are they joking?
They make total sense here, and I will not be able to really explain it here, but basically cryptocurrencies are kept in wallets. Either it's a wallet on a server, which means it's on a computer somewhere else, or it's on your own local computer. Either way, it's stored somewhere. But you are allowed and are able to always transfer what is basically stored online onto your actual machine. So, specifically, the community was ripping him to shreds because he didn't save the JPEGs specifically associated with them on his wallet, which is funny because I told you guys before how NFTs are just serial numbers. They're not actually the JPEGs themselves. Like, you can just steal the JPEG anyway, or like you can just share and copy that JPEG anywhere. But specifically, the actual NFT files were kept on OpenSea. So in the end, he couldn't really control what was about to happen here. More than a few commentators also point out that OpenSea, the website that sells a lot of NFTs, is making a lot of money off this, basically did not intervene. And especially Kramer's pleas for a centralized response seem to go against, you know, kind of this like big tenet of the cryptocurrency NFT market, which is about the fact that it's not regulated by government and that anyone can have access to it. The idea that also code is law, and that once your tokens are in someone else's digital wallet, that's basically the end of the game. While OpenSea had not actually reversed the transaction on the blockchain, it did block the stolen NFT sales on its own platform. Scams have always been a part of the cryptocurrency industry, and this is why I want to bring this up. It's always the, like, basically question of centralized intervention. There was a recent study that found that 50% of all the tokens listed on the popular decentralized exchange Uniswap are straight up scams. Last month, CoinDesk proudly defended Olympus DAO of being the future of money, while admitting that in the first sentence of its defense that yes, it's a Ponzi scheme, which I said before and we'll say it again. NFTs and all of this are Ponzi schemes. They are pump and dump schemes. Scams and thefts in the decentralized finance space have continued to get worse, reaching about $14 billion in 2021. $14 billion of money is stolen via scams on the NFT marketplace. This is where we prioritize our money at this
point. Black stockings, white shoes shouldn't be allowed in the church.
No, it's absolutely stupid as
fuck. Centralized governments, monkey ape drawings.
Oh my god, breaking news alert. Breaking news alert from Ashlyn. Jason Momoa and Lisa Bonet say they're breaking up after more than 4 years of marriage.
Well, that's fine. I'm joking. Good for everyone involved. Hope they're happy. R.I.P., etc. I have one thing I want to talk about. Well, it's actually like 16 things, but it's certainly a lot.
That's how all our conversations start.
Singular.
Matt, let me show you something. It's actually moments. In three encyclopedias and 12 movies and three TV shows.
So I teased this on the main episode that Kanye West was planning a Russia trip to meet Putin. So Billboard reports that Kanye is apparently planning a trip to Russia, specifically Moscow, where he will meet with Putin and hold a series of Sunday service performances. I was reading through his article, and the gist is basically that his strategic advisor, Amir Sudan, is making the arrangements and spilling the beans to the press about the whole trip, as well as his attorney, Scott Balber. So listen to this. This is the really key thing that'll unlock a lot of future things for us. So Balber is the managing partner of Herbert Smith Freehill's New York office and is the law firm's U.S. head of investigations and financial services litigation. Sudan says that he and Balber are acting as liaisons between Ye and Balber's Azerbaijani Russian billionaire real estate developer client Aras Agalarov.
That is a title.
And his son Amin Agalarov. Balber declined to comment further on the record. So listen to this. I already told you to listen to this, but we're going to keep listening. Billboard also reports that Agalarovs are close associates of Putin, with his son Aras being the president of the Crocus Group. Eagle-eyed listeners will know what the Crocus Group is, but if you do not know what the Crocus Group is, just listen here.
Sure.
So, why does the Crocus Group sound familiar? Well, Aras is the quote-unquote self-proclaimed Trump of Russia. He and his father worked with Trump through the Crocus Group on the 2013 Miss Universe pageant.
Amazing.
In Moscow.
Amazing.
Allegedly, also a can of worms that we don't need to get into here on the podcast, but I'm sure all of you can draw inferences between Russian billionaires and the Miss Universe pageant in Moscow and Donald Trump.
If you're on the Patreon, you know where to connect the dots on this.
Yeah, so... The Agalarovs are also allegedly helped coordinate the infamous 2016 Trump Tower meeting with Russian lawyer Natalia V on dirty intel they had concerning Hillary Clinton during the 2016 election.
Great trope, intel on Clinton.
So
always makes a round.
So Kanye West is of course, headed to Russia to meet them.
They're like, this is exactly what we want. This is exactly what I need to do.
So
next.
I found this report buried in Forbes from like a few years back.
Mm-hmm.
Please mind the source. Obviously, it is Forbes. Like, let's just all be very clear.
Capital
about
brand.
This.
Yeah.
The article's called, quote, Trump's business partners allegedly involved in human trafficking, mafia matters, and probably money laundering.
Not shocking.
Okay, woof. What an article. I'm going to read this in full. So, this is specifically about the Agalarovs. Trump finally got to Moscow in 2013 when Russian billionaire Aras Agalarov and his pop singer son, Amin, hosted the Miss Universe contest at Crocus City Hall, a property they control through the Crocus Group on the outskirts of the city. The math behind the event did not really add up, according to Tuesday's report in Forbes. The Agalarov's firm ended up spending about $12 million to host the contest. The Agalarov's paid $6 million in licensing fees and took an additional $6 million in various other expenses. In return, they only received about $2 million in revenue, meaning they lost roughly $10 million on the event.
Christ.
Trump, who was a co-owner of Miss Universe and therefore received his money, didn't seem to mind that his partners hadn't fared well. Quote, I had a great weekend with you and your family, he tweeted at Aras after the event, which included a performance by Amit. You have done a fantastic job. Trump Tower, Moscow is next. Amin was wow. The Agalarovs and the Trumps ended up pursuing a real estate project, but it also fell apart. That might have been a good thing for Trump, given that the Senate report says about his partners, quote, the Agalarovs have significant ties to Russian organized crime and have been closely affiliated with individuals involved in murder, prostitution, weapons trafficking, kidnapping, extortion, narcotics trafficking, money laundering, and other significant criminal enterprises.
I mean, what
else? Some
of
those activities have extended outside of Russia, including to the United States.
Well, where else?
The report goes on, quote, Aras Agalarov has also had significant ties to the Russian government, including to individuals involved in influence operations targeting the 2016 election. He has access to President Putin and to Putin's close aide, Dmitry Peskov. A spokesperson for the Crocus Group, the Agalarov's business, did not respond to requests for comment before publication. After this story came out, a lawyer whose firm represents the Agalarovs got in touch. Quote, the statements made by the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence and parroted in the Forbes article regarding Aras and Amin are utterly baseless and categorically false. The Agalarovs are well-respected, highly ethical businessmen with no connection whatsoever to organized crime or any criminal activity. So just to be clear again, right? This is directly from Billboard in their report about Kanye's trip to Russia. Scott Balber, his attorney, is a managing partner at a law firm that represents his finances. Sudan, Amir Sudan, his strategic advisor, is taking him to Russia and acting as a liaison with his lawyer Balber between Kanye and his clients, who are Azerbaijani Russian billionaires, Amin and Aras Agalarov. There, Kanye hopes to meet with Putin and perform some Sunday services. So that's just a fun little... You know, the Billboard thing was kind of like skirting around
it's
the topic
so
of
stupid.
Who the Agalarovs were, but I was like, wait, the Crocus Group. I think it unlocked a memory in my brain that I had buried during Trump's presidency.
Where would you have even seen that during that?
Because,
well, I guess those headlines.
No, because Matt, that Senate intelligence report, that was the Senate intelligence report that said Trump had helped conspire with Russian foreign officials.
Yeah, I guess there was that
influence
whole thing.
The election. That whole Senate committee report, that was what that came out. That was what the Forbes article was talking about. It had just come
Don't
out.
Don't you love how like nothing ever changes? And, just,
and obviously
just,
I was
okay, they're still around.
Jezebel and writing Barf Bag, which was like our politics roundup. So I had known who Amin and Aras were because Amin was like a wannabe, he's like a wannabe pop star in Russia.
Right.
So of course he's going to want to meet Kanye West,
oh,
right?
God.
But
yeah, I'm
dad,
sure they're paying
Aras
him a
Agalarov,
lot of money.
Yeah, he's like a highly influential billionaire in Russia and
oh,
in
much
Eastern
money.
Europe. So like, I just was all spinning in my head and I was like, Crocus Group, Crocus Group. And then I went looking and I remembered all the like dirty money connections and the ties to the Miss Universe pageant, all that. So That's just like, you know, what's Kanye West doing there? I don't know, but I'm sure he is picking out a bunch of fabulous outfits for Julia Fox to wear.
This is so dark, but I just realized, and I shouldn't say more, where the rest of that $10 million probably came from to fund that Miss Universe pageant, but I'm just, there's no need to say more about it. Again, the connections have been made.
Do you think he's gonna get Julia Fox like a nice fur coat? What are those hats, the fur hats?
Oh, I don't know, because I feel like I always say it. I'm probably going to be wrong. I don't want to offend any Russians in here who probably
know but you know what I'm talking about,
yes,
right?
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know
about.
His Burrow Barbie, Julia Fox? Out of
Burrow Barbie. Yeah.
I'm sure she's going to have a very nice outfit to wear to Russia with Kanye.
It's giving very much like, why are they always in Dubai?
I mean, do you think Kim...
Why are they always in Russia doing Sunday service for...
Do you think Kim feels jealous that Kanye forced her to go to the White House and now his new thing gets to go to Russia with him? Like, do you think Kim at all is feeling a twinge of envy for the life she could have had?
No. Absolutely not.
Also, speaking
especially of, since Kim in, like, is performing her, like, home roots era now. Like, she's doing her, like, oh, we just like to go to Coney Island and, like... Wear sweats and like.
Well, speaking of Kim,
you know, do some cute things.
Did you see what Pete Davidson was up to this weekend?
Why would I have seen what Pete Davidson was up to this weekend? Now I'm seeing this photograph. Oh, so, Lord mercy.
Pete Davidson was at Nobu with Anthony and Martha Stewart.
I literally get the camera in the Nobu and send it straight to Ink for Free Enterprises so I can know what they were talking
this
about.
Cursed.
What would these people
let's
be talking about?
This absolutely wretched, cursed Daily Mail copy. Quote. Martha wined and dined her way through Los Angeles before boarding a private plane back to the East Coast. And Martha Stewart found a few familiar faces when she ran into Pete Davidson and Anthony Porosky as she stopped by Nobu Malibu on Monday night. The 80-year-old culinary queen joked that there was no sign of 80? Kim Kardashian as she chatted it up with a cute guy with painted fingernails at the trendy sushi spot on Pacific Coast
Not
Highway.
Not the trendy
in a
sushi
sweet
spot.
Snap shared to Instagram.
Oh my God, that is the most cursed copy. A sweet snap shared to Instagram. Also, the nails are painted white. It's not very cute. She looks great for 80. It's actually, I mean, I'm sure the Facetune is fully enforced in this photo, but.
I know. Wow. No, I mean, when you make as much,
I would think
when you
70.
Make as much money as Martha Stewart, you
like
get
you
to
can't look,
look like
old.
Martha Stewart
yeah, you're not.
80, yeah,
you don't have to look old anymore.
No, no, this is an iconic caption from.
I
Martha
was gonna
Stewart.
Say there's like
are
17
you ready?
Ads
are you ready for this?
This?
Okay, so
let's do it.
Never know who you'll bump into at hashtag Nobu Restaurants hashtag Nobu Malibu
no,
at Nobu Malibu at Nobu Restaurants at Nobu Malibu at Pete Davidson having dinner with friends. No, not. At Kim Kardashian, exclamation point, at Anthony with at BM Levine.
Oh my God.
At Daisy Beauty Toy, at Dorian Lay in the NYC, and at Judy Morris 3 out west for at Puppy Bowl 2021.
Oh my God.
And at the Ellen Show taping. Busy, busy, but never too busy for good food and friends. Remember at Pete Davidson was one of my fellow roasters on the hashtag the Justin Bieber roast a few years back.
Oh my God.
Now he is on at NBC SNL and is in some very funny movies. Cute guy with painted fingernails at Anthony's
oh,
in a new
the
season
one with
of
the
at,
cute fingernails.
At Queer Eye.
Oh my God. I can't. Okay, I love Ashlyn saying that they're not even tagging the real Pete Davidson account. It's Pete Davidson's like fan page. Also, I mean, also the...
Also, I love that she just assumed the gay guy was the one with painted fingernails, but
it's actually
it's Pete Davidson with the painted fingernails.
There's so much going on in this photograph. Like, how many people did she have to contact before posting? Also, I love that it's liked by Martha Hunt is like whoever yeah, took this screenshot.
Queen. Queen. So, yeah.
That's a chaotic alignment if I ever saw one. What is this you had about the tratification of former Insta models?
Okay, so this is something we don't really need to talk about too much.
Okay.
But the former wife of Hugh Hefner is, quote, getting candid about some big changes in her life in
Candid
magazine. So Crystal Hefner says she removed everything fake from her body and purged her social media. So this was just like a random thought that I was having.
Love
right?
A new year, new me moment.
You and I are on TikTok, right? You and
oh,
I are
yeah,
on Instagram.
Unfortunately.
And we've definitely seen a lot of like influencer kind of content and like the general vibes of like apps in general swing heavily towards trad wifery, right? Like, especially in the wellness space. Like,
oh, it's all about the arc, like finishing your arc.
Yeah.
You know, being like, oh, now it's time to settle.
Yeah, we've seen a lot. And I mean, obviously, now it's time for so much me. Of wellness culture is based in like trad wife ideologies, right? Like returning to the land, all natural motherhood, et cetera, et cetera. But this was really interesting if you just kind of take it for the fact that this was like a very famous playmate.
Yeah.
And the wife of Hugh Hefner, right? And what Playboy and Hugh Hefner represented, basically coming out with this like big reveal, I guess. It's just interesting to me. I don't have anything like particularly deep, but it goes along with like a trend that I'm seeing in influencer spaces where things are going like increasingly conservative.
Well, you're getting the people who are like at, let's say, the furthest extent of being like an aesthetically pleasing body for that type of consumption, going along with the same trends.
What I really am trying to point out is that the pendulum is swinging back, right?
Absolutely.
Like the 2010s,
just like I said with Kardashian doing her like homegrown roots.
The 2010s saw an extreme descent into
excess.
I would say, and I think that that excess is getting chipped away shortly, like it was like shortly before Obama's second term after the recession, you know, like the 2000s.
Yeah, because there was the hipster era. We saw the 2008-2012 kind of like
we
reduction
also saw, like, you know, the 2000s like and the 90s like excess consumption, excess media culture, excess riches,
it swings so many
luxuries. Yeah, like I think it is just a pendulum, right? Because of the way the media works and because of the way these ideas get propagated amongst new generations and the old generations.
Well, it's like
right?
the nouveau riche we saw in the early 2000s, suburban culture collapsed at the recession, so they had to build back up with their twee era through the hipster era. And then now we're doing the excess of the tech industry in 2010s.
This is from People.
Now it's going right back.
The widow of Playboy founder Hugh Hefner revealed in a lengthy Instagram caption on Monday night that she had, quote, removed everything fake from my body and deleted all my old photos. I am more authentic, vulnerable, and feel that I belong more to myself. I am mine. After the last handful of years of staying true to myself on social media, this is from her Instagram, I felt that all the people here with me at this point actually care and are invested in my life in a positive way, and for that I say thank you. Over 5 years, my account has shifted from not always safe for work posts to my real safe for work life. The real me. I was living for other people before to make others happy, suffering internally in the process. As most of you know, I grew my following during my Playboy years. Certain photos grow followings fast. In short, sex sells. I don't know whether I felt empowered by dressing scantily, showing cleavage, etc., or if I just expected of me or what. But now, I can confidently and 100% proudly say modesty is what empowers me these days because it feels so much better internally. It will probably be this way for the rest of my life. I removed everything fake from my body and deleted all my old photos. I am more authentic, vulnerable, and feel that I belong more to myself. I am mine. As I made this transition, I always thought, will my account survive? As I saw followers drop by thousands every day. I use Social Blade to check. You can type in any username and see for yourself. And this Instagram post is like literally screenshots of her Social Blade.
Well, you know, hey, that's true.
So I was in the red. Every day I was watching the girls that had similar pages keep posting the same scantily clad stuff and growing exponentially while I tanked hard. But now it has shifted. Now it's in the green. Most days the count is growing. Now my women followers are giving the men followers a run for their money. Now I truly feel I have an army of supporters that care and see an actual soul behind the lens. For that I say thank you. If you follow me for insight into my past life, my new one, my travels, my health hurdles, lifestyle, you name it, thank you. It will take it. I will make it my mission to try and help in all the ways that I can while staying true to myself. I hope all of you can stay true to yourself and what feels right for you, because there is power that you can't find anywhere else. I love you.
I mean, I think that's very valid, though. Like, everything she says, like, it makes a lot of sense.
Again, I'm not like posting any of this or sharing any of it.
No, but it's
like,
very interesting.
Snark
I think.
On it, but it is interesting because I don't think that Crystal Hefner is alone in this. I think growing movement of naturalism.
Oh yeah.
Obviously we both know, you and I, there are a lot of wellness influencers that are getting the Botox, that are getting the Juvederm, that are getting the pump, right? They're not posting about it, but I know what their liposuction scars look like because I have the same way. Mm-hmm.
Well, also Big Soy Naturals, shout out to them, have a really good episode they did in November, I think, about like beauty standards and how like there's also this trend now where the beauty standards are changing from things that you can do like that to other things that are a bit more inaccessible, like great skincare and basically a lifestyle that requires very little exertion in the body.
Yeah.
Plus you achieve a different type of beauty. So it's also shifting in a sense to where like the kind of aesthetics that people were doing before on Instagram are not playing out, and now it's shifting to something else, which is aligned with wellness culture, like you were just saying.
I mean, also, if we want to talk about a lot of the wellness culture stuff that we're seeing, this shift back to conservatism, but also the way that it aligns with a lot of like growing health movements in wellness, you know, the
sure, unfortunately very close to anti-vax the
symptomification of everyday
life. Oh, and the pathologizing
yeah. of human, like the pathologizing of human emotion into illness.
Yeah.
In 2016, Crystal also had made news because she had removed her breast implants, like a lot of women have recently. But it mirrored a lot of what Yolanda Hadid had also done around the same time. In a post from that era, she said that the breast implants had slowly poisoned her and that she had grown intolerant to foods and beverages, unexplained back pain, constant neck.
Is this Crystal or Yolanda?
Crystal.
Okay, yes.
Cognitive dysfunction, brain fog, memory loss, stunted hair growth, incapacitating fatigue, burning bladder pain, low immunity, recurring infections, and problems with my thyroid and adrenals.
And this is pretty common.
And by the way, if you had remembered, we actually talked about adrenal fatigue. Do you remember?
It sounds very familiar. We've had conversations about this.
Remember when we did the episode about Goop and the adrenal fatigue illnesses?
Where and the things like, they would sell for that.
Like rich women who feel tired.
Yep.
I'm simplifying it, obviously, but like...
Well, yeah, the adrenals, the thyroids, and other hormones that people can take to counteract it. We did that episode
so long ago. I think in 2018.
Oh my God, that's like almost 4 years
ago. Where we talked about how Goop had like pathologized white womanhood.
Yeah, absolutely.
Luxurious white womanhood. But yeah, no, I just thought that was really interesting. I don't have anything like particularly deep to say, but I did think it was something to share.
No, I mean, we saw that
it goes along with like, we see it all over the place,
but I think like, kind of like I was saying earlier, this is someone who comes from a background, like obviously the Playboy era, like very much an era of aesthetic and of exaggerated proportions
and also objectification when you're Hugh Hefner's wife.
Yeah. And that whole world
again, this is, I'm trying to be totally clear, I am in no way like trying to snark on Crystal or...
But like she was saying, the male followers versus the female followers, like the people that, a lot of the men that would follow her were very much like, you are just some hot chick that I think is pretty, and I'm following you and a bunch of other accounts that are the same. Like that is, those are the, that's the people she's moving away from, and now she's seeing people who are related to her empowerment or related to her journey in that sense. It's a very different audience. And I see what she means by that. I think it's interesting.
I also want to read this comment. Do you want to read this comment?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're on Patreon, you've seen this comment. It was on our most recent episode where we were catching up on our 2021 winter break. But some people I know just put the Patreon feed on their podcast app and never see anything. But someone left some interesting kind of tea on our last episode, and it relates to the Pete Davidson Julia stuff. So they said, wow, I never thought to this day would come, but I have a inside scoop to contribute. I was on the Pete x Julia paper mag shoot in September of 2019. Bummed to say that Pete and Julia didn't seem to know each other at all. Julia even had her BF at the time stop by the set to fanboy over Pete, and likewise Pete had a girl stop by to say hi as well. No idea who she was, but she had shoulder length brown hair and looked very Gossip Girl. Haha. Side note, Pete and his posse, all dressed in monochromatic matching sweatsuits, each a different color, including shoes, and made us suffer through a Frank Sinatra best of playlist on repeat for most of the shoot. That's the detail that really is like, I would go insane around these people if I was forced to on a photo shoot. Like, as someone who's been a PA and like done photo shoot assisting, for someone to put a Frank Sinatra best of playlist on throughout the entire day would just drive me absolutely mad. Like, it doesn't even matter how good or bad it is at the point, but... Very chaotic energy. Exactly. And the type of sweatsuit, you know, like, like being able to prepare for that is, oh my God, it's absolutely insufferable.
I know exactly, I think.
But thank you for your tea.
I think I know exactly
who. You know who this Gossip Girl brunette girl is?
Yes.
Okay, I see you Googling.
Give me a second. I just want to know the timeline of when this was.
I think it was around September 2019.
Yes, it was Kaia Gerber. So... I knew exactly the brunette.
Yep. Oh my God, the fact that you have a photo immediately of this.
No, I knew. I was like, wait, they're either talking about... I knew they probably weren't talking about Margaret Qualley, who was in The Leftovers. She was the kid in The Leftovers. I knew they probably weren't talking about Margaret Qualley. No shade to Margaret Qualley, but Kaia Gerber's way more Gossip Girl. So anyways, I was like, yeah. And actually, there's a very iconic set of photos of Kaia Gerber, if you don't know who her parents are. Girl.
Wait, who? I'm pretty sure I've seen this before because I know her through the
show.
I'm
going to see if I can show you a photo because you might not know. So, Cindy Crawford is Kaia Gerber's mom.
Oh my God.
And these photos are so iconic, and I wrote about it, where Kaia Gerber was in Pete Davidson's apartment and Cindy Crawford and Rand Gerber, who owns Casamigos.
Oh! It's all connected.
There we go.
It's all connected.
We're outside Pete Davidson's apartment while he was like apparently having some freak out inside, and they didn't know the paparazzi were filming them, and they were saying like he needs an intervention and he needs help, and like we're trying to rescue our daughter. Yeah. And I was like covering it at the time for Jezebel, but I wouldn't say iconic. You know what I mean? But
iconic does not always mean a good thing.
I remembered that exactly because I had to transcribe those paparazzi videos for Dirtbag that I had done. And so I was like, wait a minute. I know exactly who this person's talking about. I also have Julia Fox tea, but I can't tell you on the podcast.
Are you? You can't like redacted.
No, because I actually have personal beef with her. And and if I say why... the people who are involved will get in trouble or like be put on blast. And I can't have that happen because I love them. So we'll talk about it.
Why couldn't you just have me say it?
No.
It's too, you can't even explain
no,
it.
No. But yeah.
Okay. We'll save it for after the pod.
I'll say this.
Okay.
Julia Fox is making moves and damn anyone who tries to get in her way. I'll say that.
Spicy.
So other than that.
Wow.
Do you have anything you want to add?
I cannot wait to watch Cheer Season 2 tonight.
Oh, yeah. We have Cheer Season 2.
I'm very excited.
We have Elden Ring coming out in a month.
We can just take a break when that comes out.
Oh, I can also say this here because it'll be out by the time. But I have a feature coming out in InStyle tomorrow. Mm-hmm. If you are a fan of The Boys or the Scream franchise or, you know... my writing, go look at InStyle tomorrow. I hope it'll be up by the time this goes up.
I cannot wait for the new Scream movie.
But I will time this a little bit later tomorrow just in case. I don't want to like
good idea.
Jump the gun on it because there are NDAs involved.
Sometimes it just gets pushed.
But I had a lot of fun. I had a really fun time.
Yeah, from the little stuff you showed me, it was good.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a really good interview and we can talk more about it next week. I have some like insider gossip that didn't make it into the profile that I want to tell you so bad.
Oh,
I literally want
like
to tell
the patrons
so
or tell
bad.
Me
all of you. I want to tell you all so bad. Okay. I'm like literally burning up inside to talk about it. Because I mean, it was like one of those things where if I was writing for a different outlet, I would have gone like another 100 words on this particular thing I'm going to tell you, but it's like InStyle, you know, so
it was not the right
place. It wouldn't
place.
Have like there, the amount of readers that would have laughed or felt some kind of satisfaction out of it was little to none. So I'm really excited about that tomorrow. It's my first big feature of the year, and I was really excited. Hopefully I get to do more like it.
Ugh, I'm excited.
I know.
What a great time.
Although I didn't get a screener for the movie, which sucks.
I know. What kind of bullshit is that? They're like, go get Omicron. Like
I don't think
else.
They want anyone to have screeners
it's
anymore.
Exclusive. It's like one of the first movies that I want to see that will only be in theaters. I think.
Have you seen all the Scream movies?
Oh, God, have I seen all the Scream movies? I've seen all of them.
I don't
like
think I've seen a single one.
Times. That is the funniest fucking part about this. You're like, you're the one interviewing them. You don't know shit about the lore. Oh my God. I've seen the first movie 100 times.
Wasn't really about Scream. Obviously.
No, what you You'll end see. Up. Yeah, I no. I when more. I read what you write, it's totally good and fine. It's not necessary, honestly.
Although I will say also,
what is there even talk about with Scream 5 at this point? You know,
I'll say this also.
Mm-hmm.
I'm burning up inside because the series, like the feature series that I was a part of for this. One of the previous subjects was Penn Badgley, and I was burning with jealousy that I didn't get the Penn Badgley interview. Burning with jealousy.
Aww.
Burning up inside.
You'll get it next time.
The way I would have left my husband for Penn Badgley at any moment, still now, like, God, I wanted to.
Give me the Addy.
I wanted to beep.
You wanted to redacted. So is redacted.
When I was in high school. So still do hit my DMs up, Penn, if you're listening. So yeah, that's all I've got. It'll be a fun month. We have a lot to look forward to. And oh, you know what also? Search Party's back, like we said in the main episode. So I'm going to look forward to that good. Too.
I would love to talk about Search Party once it's over and, also, and everyone can watch
New
it.
New Jersey's almost back. Real Housewives of New Jersey. There's like a lot on TV, thank God.
I know. A lot started happening this month.
UK versus like the world ramping up.
Oh my God, that plus season 14. Jesus Christ. Maybe Queens of the Universe just finished. Season. Oh, an all-winner season.
I don't have any
tea
about that, though. I'm literally just, this is just conjecture.
But the Reddit has enough tea. Just go to Reddit. Just search all winners Reddit. You'll get everything you need to know.
Okay, well, that's it, guys.
Yeah. Wow, did you just fart?
Yeah.
Wow.
Listen.
She shitted on the floor. Right in front of me. It's disgusting.
I looked you right in the eyes while
I know, that's why it felt like you shitted on the floor. It was, the eyes made it so much more intense.
You pissed on my leg last episode, so I get to shit on the floor this episode.
Shitting and pissing and farting and crying.
So, I think we can retire our Euphoria tagline. We have to go back.
It's too much. It's a lot of words.
I think it's too much. I think it was a good
You've also never watched Euphoria. I'm going to out you right now. As someone who's tweeted a verified Twitter account talking about Euphoria, but she's never seen it.
I don't tweet about Euphoria.
Not in a while, but you
No,
have.
I've never tweeted about Euphoria.
I distinctly remember what your thesis in those tweets were.
Never heard it.
I could expose you, but I won't do it.
Don't know anything you're saying right now.
You're welcome for keeping this a secret.
3, 2,
What are we saying?
Hi,
my name is BB Rexha, and I'm in the studio doing something I've never done before. You know, it does just, it does have a je ne sais quoi.
The je ne sais quoi. Goodbye.
Come on, if you know the words, let's go.
What do I think of her?
Yes.
I don't think of her. Bless a red wine and a swisher. I think you get the picture. Here I go. Oh.